Thank you. Thank you for coming and giving me a chance to share some rather unusual music. And of course, I want to thank Michael Wilpers and the gallery to invite me to play this music in this really wonderful surrounding with lots of beautiful calligraphy and painting. And I have chosen pieces that resonate with what's being exhibited. And I'm pretty sure the pieces that I play were played by the Ming Dynasty gentleman artists, because these artists, most of them also play the qin, which is the name of this instrument. And I chose pieces that I know were played during the Ming Dynasty. Now, if you allow me to indulge in a few words about this instrument and this music, because not too many people know about this, it's probably one of the oldest kind of music in China. It dates to at least 2,000 years ago. And just the fact that it's being old is not unusual, but it's being continually played throughout the last two millennia, and that's what's so unusual. And particularly the instrument, for instance, you see in front of me, it's this particular one is made in 1640, but we know that the construction of the instrument has not changed very much at all for 2,000 years. It is a wooden instrument, lacquered all around, with seven strings made out of silk, and this has not changed. So the pieces that I'm going to play for you, they were written in notation during the found in the Ming Dynasty. So we also know that what you hear today is very, very likely similar to the music that was played 400 or 500 years ago. A couple of other words on this music that may help you appreciate it. That first of all, these gentlemen artists who are also gentlemen musicians, they play this music mainly for themselves. So they are the elite members of the society. They have holds, because most of them are government, high government officials, and they have holds of political, economic, and social power, so they don't need the music to make a living. And that makes this music very different from almost all other kinds of music that we know of. And they don't need to play the music to please an audience. All they need is to please themselves. So most likely is that they play only for themselves in their solitude, whether either in their study or out in nature, as you'll see in some of the paintings that these musicians will be admiring the nature, but with a qin, with an instrument being held by their servant who served as their qin carriers, and we call them their qin boys, not that different from golf caddies, so that when the moment strikes that they feel like they want to play, so the qin boy will come and set out the instrument for them. Now, these gentlemen, officials, literati officials, they are very learned, and that's how they came to become high officials, because it's somewhat different from America. I think in China, if you are to hold a high government official, you have to be very, very learned. It's not just being voted into a high official, even though you may not know anything. So these very learned and they tend to be mostly gentlemen, they created a whole philosophy on the value of this instrument and its music. And its influence, the philosophy is basically either Confucianism or Taoism. These are the two most important Chinese philosophy, philosophical systems. Confucianism, according to these literati, playing the qin will cultivate your moral character and your personal virtue, so that you'll be able to serve the society better as high officials. Because Confucianist philosophy is one that promotes people to serve their fellow men and women. On the other hand, the Taoist philosophy is the opposite. The Tao philosophy says that we should cultivate our own individual self and then try to merge into nature. So it's really not to interact with other human beings, but become a better person on your own. Now, these two philosophies have played in Chinese history for over two millennia and play very important roles to these gentlemen artists. They are sort of opposite, you can tell. One is that wants you to go into society, other one is force you to leave the society. but they both play important roles. So anyway, so this music has this philosophical background and beyond just musical artistic value. But in fact, musically, this is extremely interesting. It's a very complex music and very difficult to understand. So even in China, most people don't know about this music. It's really just the scholar officials who play them. Ordinary people don't, because it requires all the pieces allude to the history and the philosophy of China. But without saying too much, I mean, in between pieces, I'll again say a few words of each piece. So the first piece I'm going to play is called Wild Geese Alighting on Level Sand. And it is particularly relevant to this exhibition because there is a painting with this exact title. Wild geese is a very is a theme that that attracted poets, attracted painters, and attracted musicians. They represent freedom and represent nature unspoiled by human society. So here is this. Let me start with this wild geese. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I want to say one word is that an earlier session, someone asked me if it is improvised. Well, my answer is that it's not improvised at all. It is based on very specific notation, which specifies all the movements. As you, some of you may notice, my hand moves a lot. This is all written into the musical notation. And the movements, of course, then influence the musical sound. What makes this notation unusual is that it doesn't give you pitch, doesn't give you rhythm, but it only tells you what to do with your hands. That's another reason why it's important that when we were studying it, that our hand postures are very important, because they are supposed to be very beautiful. They have to. You cannot do anything arbitrary. It has to follow certain techniques of movements, and lots of essays on how to play the qin would compare or use natural world animal movements as metaphors for our hands and fingers. And some of the most often invoked animals are phoenixes and then wild geese or fish and crane and even woodpecker. And so it is very important that, I think it's very important that you not just listen to the music, but you need to watch the hand movements. And even more important, which you people will never be able to share with me, is to feel the touch of the strings and movement of the strings, which of course you cannot do. Only if you play the music, then you can really truly understand the essence of the music. Now, one aspect of the music which you probably notice is that when my left hand moves around like this, it makes these scratching noises, and you can't hear anything. It seems we're sort of moving for the movement's sake. But in fact, of course, I can hear it. It's very subtle sound. As my fingers move from point to point, the melody sounded very, very softly. The pitches changed that only I can hear. And occasionally, maybe the people sitting right, you know, a few feet away can hear, but beyond that, it's just inaudible. That is another reason why this music is played only for oneself, mainly, because other people will not be able to share the beauty of this music. Let me move on to the second piece, which is called Drunken Fisherman Sings in the Evening. And again, my music will resonate a lot with the paintings that are being exhibited. There are quite a number of paintings that are about fishermen. It's a very important theme to painters, to poets, and to musicians. And I think the poets in particular, you know, they adore being intoxicated, because then it gives them certain freedom. As some of us, I think we know that. So the drunken fisherman, it paints a picture of his being totally free from all the worldly concerns and worries. And the music has certain rhythms and themes to imply a rocking of the boat, of his fishing boat, and of course the intoxication is expressed in this quite wild and rapid rhythm. I hope you enjoy that. Thank you. The third piece that I'll play is quite a special piece. It's considered one of the oldest piece in the repertory because it's made reference to by some of the oldest literature 2,000 years ago, even though the oldest notation and dates to the early 1400 only. But we believe that the notation actually exists before that, but it's just not preserved. The piece is called Flowing Waters. And it's of particularly interest to us, I think, here in Washington, D.C., because I just went to the Air and Space Museum. There's a section on the Voyager satellite that sent out in 1977, and it's supposed to go fly beyond the solar system into deep space, into other galaxies. And on the Voyager satellite is a disc of a recording of music. There are 50 pieces of music, and that represent many cultures around the world. There's one piece of music that represents China. At that time, NASA consulted Professor Zhou Wenzhong. At that time, he was a professor at Columbia and the authority in Chinese music, and asked him to recommend a piece of Chinese music to be put into this recording. And so Professor Zhou recommended a piece on the Qin, and specifically the piece called Flowing Streams, Flowing Waters. So this particular piece, we never know, some eons away, strange beings may pick up and they may actually listen to this piece called Flowing Waters. Now, but there is a difference between my piece, my version, and the version that's sent out into deep space. Because for the last 150 or so years, the most popular version of Flowing Waters is from late 19th century score. It is a development or a version of the oldest extant score from 1425. As the Qin music develops through the centuries, some musician will add or subtract or make changes to the music. And the one that's mostly played today is from the 19th century. But my teacher worked on this oldest version from 1425, and this is the version that I'll play for you. Probably nobody else played this version. If you find somebody who plays the Flowing Waters, they are likely to play the much later version. So here is Flowing Waters from 1425. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We now come to the last piece. The title is Mists and Clouds Over the Rivers Xiao and Xiang. These two rivers, Xiao and Xiang, has been famous for many, many, many centuries because poets and painters and musicians would write or perform about them. In fact, in the gallery again, there's a painting called The Rivers Xiao and Xiang After the Rain. So please do try to spot it. And so the topic is the same, these rivers Xiao and Xiang. Apparently these rivers, it's in southeastern China in the Hunan province. It's famous for very often covered with mists and clouds. So that's why this piece, the title of this piece. And we know the composer of this piece, unlike many others, we really don't know who composed it. They are very, very old, so the composer is lost in the midst of time. But this piece is composed by somebody called Guo Chu Wang, and he lived in the Southern Song Dynasty about 13th century AD. And he's one of the gentlemen officials, and like many of them, he's very frustrated that the country is not in being governed by good hands. So once when he's at the rivers Xiao and Xiang, and he saw this beautiful mist and clouds over Xiao and Xiang, so he composed this piece, but he wrote that, and we have evidence that he wrote it. He says that he feels that these mists and clouds, they obscure the mountains, the view of the mountains behind the river. And he said it's like the corruption of the government that obscures the integrity of the Chinese people, the purity of the people in this. So he's one of these very frustrated scholar officials who are very disappointed by the government. So this is the, of course, this is a political message of this piece, but at the same time, of course, this piece is a description of the painting of the scenery with mists and clouds. There are certain parts that, to me, it's trying to reflect the mists and clouds and their reflections on the river, but this is not the place to explain this to you. But I just want to say that the third level of appreciation is that it's simply a magnificent piece of composition. It has a very complex structure, and to play it well, you really have to grasp the largeness of the structure of the piece, as well as its difficulty in its techniques, because it's well known for its being difficult to play. In fact, my teacher, who I learned most of my music from her, she would teach us all these other pieces, and finally she would teach us this piece. And then afterwards she would say, all right, you have graduated, there's no more to learn, you can leave. So it just shows that, and now we know that it's her absolutely favorite piece. I'm very glad that I have a chance to play this piece for you. It's one of the best known pieces in the repertory. Thank you.
Thank you.